You're listening to McBee Care Threads, a podcast where leaders across the healthcare industry can learn from each other. We'll discuss stories and explore strategies to help providers deliver value-based care and hear your peers share their best practices for success. Let's get into the show.
Hello and welcome everyone to McBee's Care Threads podcast. My name is Erin Duffy Dupre, and I'm a manager of clinical consulting with oversight of our IRF education services here at UDSMR McBee. So today we will hear from our guests, Randy Farkas and Denise Jaffris. Both of these extraordinary ladies have been working in the IRF space for about 20 years in New York for two different hospital systems. Both have been dedicated professionals in the IRF industry, as well as loyal UDSMR software subscribers. So today we're going to learn more about Randy and Denise's current roles and responsibilities, as well as how they are utilizing outcomes data effectively and their individual experiences with implementing an electronic medical record system to support all of the IRF regulatory requirements. But before we get started, just a little bit more about our guests today. Randy is a speech-language pathologist by clinical trade, currently has the title of Senior PPS Coordinator at NYU Rest Rehab, and that's located in New York, New York. Randy's been working in the PPS Coordinator role since the inception of IRF PPS back in 2002. Randy collaborates closely with physicians, clinical teams, and hospital administration to ensure effective patient care and outcomes management. And she's been instrumental in developing data collection tools that has helped implement three different electronic medical record systems. So we hope to tap into that a little bit today. Also joining us, Denise Jaffris, the Director of Rehab Admissions, and that's at St. Charles Hospital, which is located on Long Island in Port Jefferson, New York. In addition to all aspects of PPS coordination, Denise is also responsible for physician and clinical staff education. She conducts internal chart audits and has even been involved in her facilities appeals process. With all these responsibilities, Denise holds herself to a very high standard when it comes to maintaining awareness of regulatory changes. And she also works closely with her rehab team with their EMR build and implementation and has extensive experience in performance improvement initiatives utilizing outcomes data. Both Randy and Denise have presented at UDSMR engagements over the years, and we were really fortunate to have them both back presenting at our fall 2024 user group. Our attendees' positive responses to their presentations really plays a role in what's led to today's discussions. I believe that they both might receive the greatest activity in our Q&A following their presentations. So ladies, welcome. I'd like to start off by having our guests. I'd like you to share with our listeners how your current roles are intersecting with the UDS data. Randy, do you want to start and maybe tell us, first of all, is there anything about your current role and primary responsibilities that I may not have addressed? And then maybe just briefly share, what are some of your key responsibilities when it comes to managing and analyzing IRF data?
Thank you, Erin. It's a pleasure to be here. I really appreciate being called on anytime by UDS and McBee to speak. And hi, Denise. We know each other well, and we both enjoy speaking. I don't want to speak on behalf of Denise, but I know that we both enjoy doing this. You did touch on a lot of things that Denise does that I also do in terms of work with the admissions team on the appropriateness and documentation to support appropriateness of a rehab admission, capturing the correct impairment and all the active comorbidities. We do emphasize the capture of 60% rule qualifying conditions and any PPS tiered comorbidities. So I also do a lot of education with the physicians on those conditions. I've also contributed to some education on our acute hospital side for our referral sources so that they're more aware of the types of patients we would like to admit. We've worked closely with the therapy teams on both the acute side and the rehab side so that they can collaborate as well. About 90% of our patients at my unit do come from our internal hospital. So we have three total sites for Rusk Rehab. Two are in Manhattan, one is in Brooklyn. And the Manhattan sites are different in that we have different patient populations, essentially across all three sites, but the Brooklyn location and our other Manhattan location have a more similar case mix. My unit is a medically complex unit, which we know that all patients who are admitted to inpatient rehab should be medically complex. However, these are patients who are sometimes transplant cases and cancer patients and a few other conditions that may fall under the other disabling or debility categories and may not be automatic 60% rule qualifying cases that we rely on more comorbidities to support the 60% rule on our population. But my primary role is, aside from the general coordinating the data that makes it into the IRFPI and staff education, I'm also responsible for representing the department in meetings because I am the senior coordinator. I'm considered the subject matter expert on PPS and CMS regulatory issues for rehab. And I participate in a lot of performance improvement as well as reporting. So when it comes to UDS data, I'm up in it. I'm very involved with the data, and I'd love to talk more about that.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. Thanks so much, Randy. We will dive deeper into some of that for sure. Denise, can you provide us with some similar information or on anything I might have left out about your current role too at St. Charles Hospital and some of your key responsibilities when it comes to IRF data management?
Sure. I think that Randy and I probably hold similar roles and responsibilities at the facilities that we work here at St. Charles. I am really the primary, although you introduced me as the Director of Rehab Admissions, I do wear two hats. So I am also the primary person regarding IRFPI data collection and, you know, again, keeping up with all the regulatory requirements, reporting, going to any meetings where data is going to be reported, compliance meetings, physical medicine and rehab departmental meetings, all the way down to meeting with staff on the rehab units to review data, provide education as it relates to anything to do with documentation with our rehabilitation patients for anything that's going to be an IRFPI data point, as well as what is required in terms of regulatory requirements for physician documentation, nursing documentation. We do have a resident program here at St. Charles Hospital as well, physical medicine and rehab residents. So we also work very closely with the residents for educating them. They do a good amount of the physician documentation. So it's really, really important that they're aware of a lot of the regulatory requirements, documentation requirements. They're not teaching that in medical school. So we really need to make sure that when a resident comes in to work in our program, you know, while I'm speaking about this, ironically, it's really usually within the first 5 days that they start in July that I am meeting with the residents and providing education to them because we really do feel it's that important. As Randy was saying, we do education right away from rehab admissions for the admission liaisons because they're really initiating the patient's medical record, documentation, education of the physicians, the residents, and then, of course, all the clinicians on the nursing unit, the nurses, the physical therapists, occupational therapists, social workers, anybody that's going to be contributing to IRFPI documentation. You know, then I will go and, I collect all of the IRFPI data that's been documented from clinicians throughout the hospital, throughout our rehab program, and pull all that together and, you know, see that all the way through to submission to CMS.
Thank you so much. Okay, so we're going to take a little bit of a deeper dive. A few things. We're going to a little bit more on the specific UDS data utilization. And then what I'd like to also take is I think for listeners, it can be really helpful to hear about how you're sharing this information and what you're sharing. So Randy, I'll direct it to you first. I know you have shared a lot over the years in past presentations on your use of outcomes in your daily workflows. Could you walk us through that process a little bit, maybe like a day in the life using?
So we found, of course, through trial and error at the very beginning of this program, where we had very little to go on other than the IRFPI training manual and whatever education we got from UDS, we really learned what to do with this system and how to educate everyone accordingly just through that trial and error. So we really depended on our UDS database to capture anything that we could capture, because at the time when we began, our electronic medical record was very limited. It had very few things in it. Most of our data was written. We were in written charts. So we utilize case custom fields or custom fields in general in UDS to capture any of those little bits of neat info on a patient that may not be captured in what was a FIM score, now a QI score, or even the demographic information. Sometimes we know a little bit more about the patient than we have fields to capture it in. So creating custom fields was a big deal for us. I can give you some more examples about what we put in those, but just to kick it off, use of custom fields and also entering data immediately. We know that the IRFPI data isn't fully complete until the end of the assessment period, which are 3 days of after admission, 2 days after discharge. But we like to get info into UDS on day one, just at least to identify patients, put in just demographic or identifying information, so that whenever we open up our UDS database, it is current. We know everyone who's in-house. We also enter in discharge dates for patients who leave. When they leave, we don't wait for the IRFPI data to be complete for that. So that, again, anytime we open the database, we know who's here, we know who just left, we know where they went. So we'll enter in discharge dates and discharge destination for those immediate discharges. So having an up-to-date database allows any report that you may run, whether you're exporting your own data or running one of the bucket reports, to be as current as possible. And that's something that we're really proud of, because doing things in real time is very helpful to a lot of people. Although I will be, upfront, most of the reporting that our administration or other departments may request is retrospective data. They want last month's or the last quarter or annual reporting. We do plenty of those. We do plenty of monthly, quarterly, annual reports, but there at any given time, people have been asking on and off over the years for something that is very real time. And we're very happy to provide that and to be able to provide that based on how we operate the database.
Very useful. Good tips. Really good tips. Okay, I mentioned this before. I'd like to talk a little bit about the sharing of data. And I'm hoping, especially for our listeners that might be newer in similar roles, I really believe that they're going to find this information helpful, because there are so many options with outcomes and the amount of reports. And to help drill that down, do you have any advice or recommendations or shares on what specific UDSMR outcome measures that you share with internal staff or and even externally? Are any of you sharing any of this information externally?
So I'm not responsible for any external reports. That would be we have a program manager for outcomes. So more of the marketing information and those kinds that go up to the shareholders would be through the outcomes department. But for me specifically, I will disseminate specific functional data, progress, number of cases, the distribution of ages, insurance coverages, and any other identifying characteristic that we may see in our comprehensive report in UDS. And that is primarily because we do have a lack of outcomes data available in a report form from our electronic medical record, which happens to be Epic. So we also, I provide a monthly 60% rule report based on the presumptive eligibility estimation reports in UDS.
And who do you share that with, Randy? I think it's helpful.
So that also, that's going to our admission liaisons. It's going to our site directors at all three sites. It's going to our director of operations. It's going to our vice president. So it's really our internal leadership. It's not necessarily going to hospital-wide leadership because we are part of NYU. They do consider us a department, not necessarily a separate rehab hospital. But I do not share information with that level. That would come from whatever I'm sending to our VP and our director, our rehab director, and our physician leadership.
Thank you. Denise, what are you guys sharing at St. Charles? What, I know probably a lot of different data. I know you've shared some things over the years as well. And also thinking of the newer listeners out there, right, in similar roles, what could you help them narrow down? Which outcomes and who to share that with?
Sure. I'd be happy to share that. So we do, obviously, we collect a lot of data. We have a lot of things that we can look at. So I think sometimes that is the challenge, right? There's a lot of data. So if you're new in this role or new to inpatient acute rehab, there's a lot of data points. So when we look in UDS, there's a tremendous number of reports that we can pull. And I'm sure that we all have our favorite. For people new in the PPS role, I'm sure you will develop your favorites. But really, here at St. Charles, we look a lot at the comprehensive performance report. I think that has a lot of information, you know, just like, you know, if you're looking for the CMI, you're looking for length of stay, you're looking for how your patients are falling into tiers for comorbid conditions. So the A, B, C, and D, based on what comorbid conditions your physicians and your clinical staff are documenting that is being picked up by HIM once the chart is, you know, being coded. So that certainly affects payments and stuff. So we look at the tier data. Also on that comprehensive performance report, you see discharge disposition. So we're always interested in discharge to community, discharge to skilled nursing facilities, discharge to acute, how many, you know, what percent of the patients are being discharged to acute. And then, of course, as Randy said, all of the functional information. So, you know, we want to look at the program. We can look at the program in a lot of different ways, but we want to see how we're doing with change. So when, for those of us who've been around for a while, we were used to looking at FIM. And I think one of the big measures we looked at when we used FIM outcomes was length of stay efficiency. So how efficient is your program? And so we still want to get at that data, right? You still want to know how is your program doing? So we want to know how the patient's doing from admission to discharge with change. So now we have those GG items. So we can look at self-care, we can look at mobility, we can look at it all together. So you want to see change, you know, how the patient's doing there. So we know now on the comprehensive performance report, we have the percentage of patients meeting or exceeding risk-adjusted expected values, as well as there's a functional efficiency section that kind of looks at everything as a whole and how is your facility doing meeting or exceeding those risk-adjusted expected values. And that also takes into consideration length of stay. So there's a lot of really good data, and it really depends who you're sharing it with. So, you know, one of the questions, Erin, you asked is, who do we share the data with? So it really, you know, it's hospital leadership. It is rehab leadership, other rehab leaders, because we also are part an acute rehab within a hospital setting. So we're not freestanding, and we're really looked at as a department within the hospital as well. So we do have departmental meetings. So we have our physical medicine and rehab meetings. We meet monthly. Information is shared. Of course, we look at quarterly information as well. We share with the rehab admission liaisons, the physiatrist team, and certainly nursing, physical, occupational, speech therapy, social work. And also, you know, a lot of the data is also used for different performance improvement projects, you know, in our rehabilitation program. So when we have we do an annual performance management, you know, performance improvement, we have a management plan. And so we do also use some of that data. You know, we make sure that we're utilizing that data for a performance improvement. You know, we want to share that information all the way down from the higher ups down to the clinicians that are actually doing the work, and what information you share and the detail of which you share really depends who you're sharing it with. You know, you're not going to be sharing with your hospital administrators actual specific, you know, maybe how often we're, you know, using the supervision score for transfers, where you might be sharing that with your physical and occupational therapist. You know, if you're
I hate to interrupt you, Denise, but this is what I've been thinking about as you've been talking about how when we've been working specifically on performance improvement, that's when we utilize more of the admission and discharge frequency of GG reports. We use the admission and discharge functional status reports, and that is more internal to our therapists, our clinicians, our frontline rehabbers.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think there's so much data available, not only that the report that I was speaking about, but, you know, if there is something specific you're looking for and you want to share with your team, go into that UDS reporting section and you will find what you're looking for. And if not, you're struggling, you know, we always can give a call. There is other ways to get data out if you're not seeing what you might be looking for. And UDS has always been really helpful with us with doing specific exports of data. Listen, if you're collecting it, there's a way to look at it.
Yes.
However your facility may want to look at it.
I like that you brought that up. You both touched on, Randy, you brought up case custom fields early on, and Denise, you're hitting it on the head now as IRFPI is massive and there is a ton of patient data being collected, but there is often other stuff, right, about the patient, the case, or the treatment team that you may want to track. And I like how you said, Denise, you know, if you're collecting the data, there's a way to pull it out and do, like we've mentioned, a dynamic export or run different custom reports. So, and I also like, I think a good nugget for those listening, remember your audience with sharing the data, right? That senior management, the C-suite staff, they might not care so much about the frequency in which you're coding oral hygiene, a level, you know, a code 4, but how that's impacting things on a bigger scale.
And I've also found, you know, it also depends who you want to really compare yourself to. We found that it was more relevant and applicable to compare ourselves to the region than to the nation, because we're in New York City. We're in a very specific urban environment. We have patients that live in fifth floor walk-ups. Some of them don't transfer in and out of cars. Some of them have other issues more relatable to an urban environment. And when you compare across the entire nation, they may not be on the same level with certain items. So we compare ourselves more to our region for a better comparison. And of course, there is always the option in the reports to do a case mix adjustment or CMG adjusted report to compare like and like patients. But I'm also coming from a unit, that medically complex unit, where our unit doesn't look a lot like other rehab units. So we struggle a little bit with who exactly do we compare ourselves to when no one has the population of cardiac and pulmonary that we do.
Yeah.
You know, so it's a little challenging that way. But to any of the newcomers, the way I see it is the data is supposed to tell a story. So if you can look at your data and know more about a patient with that data than you had known before, then you're doing it right. So collect what you need to be able to tell the story of that patient.
I like that.
The last thing I just want to mention, because Randy, you brought up, you know, ways you can look at it with the adjustment, CMG adjustment and stuff. And it just made me think about, you know, just making sure that listeners are aware that you can also look at it by patient type in terms of diagnosis. So that also, when you really want to break out, how do we look just with our stroke patients? And you don't want to look at all your patients all together, because I think, like you mentioned, telling the story, Randy, and I think when we want to look and sit down, maybe you're going to sit down with the clinicians that work primarily with your stroke population, and you don't want to be talking to them about the cardiac patients or, you know, another type of patient population, maybe an orthopedic or something else. So you really want to be able to pull out a, you know, specific data, because you want to be knowing that what you're comparing to makes sense. So if you're looking at length of stay, and if you're looking at change, and you're looking at, you know, comorbid conditions and stuff, that you're, you know, really narrowing it down to a specific population and then sharing that information appropriately.
100% agree.
Excellent. Okay, we're going to shift gears a little bit. And Randy already mentioned her EMR vendor. We've opened up talking about how both got very involved in the builds of your EMR. So I'm aware actually that you both have the same EMR vendor. You both use Epic. Based on our discussions, though, it seems like maybe your customizations are a little bit different. Denise, I'm going to start by directing this to you initially, because your fall user group presentation really discussed your IRF team's use of Epic and how this led to the decision to adopt UDSMR's HL7 interface. So if you want to just give us a little bit about that journey, the process and the results so far.
Sure. So yeah, we do use Epic here at St. Charles as well. We started with Epic many, many years ago when we were first switching to an electronic medical record. At that time, Epic did not have an inpatient rehabilitation product. I think Randy's story is very similar. So we were in, you know, both of our facilities were in this situation where we needed to build our own rehab specific documentation within the Epic platform. So, you know, we all know in the rehab world that there's specific required documentation, there's specific data that we needed to be able to collect. And it's certainly not the same as an acute medical patient. You know, I was part of the team that did that initial build for Epic. It took us a long time to build our, you know, very specific product. And we're very, very happy with it. It's all homegrown, customized to what our processes are. And we have certainly had to make changes throughout the years. And I know Erin was alluding to the big changes when the IRF-PI, we were coming up to the IRF-PI 4.0. When for anyone doing this for a while knows that, you know, for years we collected much fewer data points. And with the IRF-PI 4.0, we were going from just a few pages all the way up to, you know, 30 plus pages of data that was going to be required. So a tremendous number more data points needed to be added. So we needed to add that into our Epic framework. At the same time, we knew we needed to build that data into Epic. We also needed to figure out how we were going to get the data out of Epic. So at that point, we really started investigating the possibility of an HL7 interface. So for those of you who are not familiar with what that is, that's basically a way that, you know, the computer platforms kind of talk to each other and send data back and forth. So it's bidirectional. So information can flow from one program to the other and then back into another program. So this HL7 interface that UDS, you know, ended up helping us create, helped us to be able to send data out of Epic, the data that we were collecting in Epic, out of Epic into UDS, the IRF-PI in UDS, and also then allows us to send data back from UDS back into Epic, namely in the form of a completed IRFPI. So we began discussions with UDS, and you know, it seemed like an overwhelming and daunting task, but we knew that in the long run we would have it would really create a lot of opportunities. We felt that in terms of reducing errors and data completion, we were really hopeful that it would offer us you know, a lot of benefits. So we did create an HL7 interface, not 100% of the IRFPI. So I would say maybe a little more than 50% of the IRFPI data does move over from our Epic medical record into UDS, into the IRFPI, which is really exciting. Randy mentioned the importance of starting, getting your record started, your IRFPI record started, pretty much on admission for a patient. And we here at St. Charles have always done that as well. And I think it's a really, really good point. We do everything concurrently. We don't enter data in after, you know, patients leave or wait until they've been here a while. So what's exciting about the interface is as soon as a patient is admitted into our hospital and they are show up as admitted in Epic, that information comes right over into UDS and populates. So it will start its an IRFPI with the patient's name, medical record number, you know, data points that you choose when you're doing the interface. And we were able to get that set up so those patients come in automatically. Certain data points that we wanted to interface come in automatically. Discharge date comes in automatically. But as a clinician, I'm able to go into the IRFPI and UDS and see what data is there. I'm able to add data, change data if there's any reason to do that, but see what might be missing so that I can go back to maybe the nurse or the occupational therapist and speak to them, you know, about if there's a piece of data that they didn't enter yet. So that's really been a big life changer here at St. Charles for us. So we're very happy after doing that interface. It is very nice to also have that completed IRFPI just transfer electronically as a PDF back into Epic, our EMR, and then have it there so that you know that it becomes part of your permanent medical record. So that's been a really nice thing for us. I know that, you know, we didn't have it for years. We were doing it, you know, all manual entry. Part of our entry is still manual, which we wanted it to be. The GG items specifically are all manually entered. We look at that. We want to have human intervention there looking at what's documented. We did not feel there was any real good way that we were comfortable with to just have information flow over in the GG items. So we do that manually.
So Denise, yeah, and before Randy, I'm curious on your Epic build too. But Denise, to confirm, you, because of your ability with so much manual entry as well, kind of a balance there, you're signing the IRFPI in the UDS software, is that right?
Correct. So anytime I'm in UDS, even if it's to review, anytime I'm closing that case listing record, I'm signing for. So again, we go in, I'm going to go in on the second day the patient's here, definitely the fourth day the patient's here, because we know by day four, everything should be in from admission. If it's not, we're on the, you know, on the clinicians making sure that's done, but definitely sign every time we're in and out of there, anytime we're adding a data point or even just reviewing it, yes.
And then that completed, fully completed IRFPI, the copy of what was transmitted to CMS, although we all know the signature page doesn't go to CMS, but then that completed IRFPI with signature page comes over to Epic?
Correct.
Wonderful. That's nice. Okay, Randy, so how is NYU Rusk using Epic? Or tell us a little bit about your build.
Yeah, so historically, we started the same as Denise has. It was a blank slate. We built our flow sheets to our specifications. We built our narrative notes to our specifications with smart phrases and other created documents. We do not like to have too many bucket reports, but certainly headers and sections to make sure that all data is captured. All the data points that we want to address have a header in our notes. But I want to say for those who are using the Epic Rehab module or who are considering using the Epic Rehab module, there are certainly a lot of advantages, but you have to ask very specific questions of your Epic team because there are certain capabilities that it just doesn't have. And it is the primary reason why we haven't adopted the Rehab module, because we did so much work up front building what we needed. We didn't feel that there were additional benefits to the Rehab module as it stands right now. One of their big selling points is the completion of the IRFPI in one place. However, they can't transmit the IRFPI data into UDS until after a patient is discharged. And we found that to be a huge disadvantage because we appreciate our real-time data. So again, with our specialized flow sheets and narrative notes, we are unfortunately not with an HL7 interface, so we are still doing everything manually. Denise and I connected after her presentation on the HL7 interface because my facility, we have been talking about it for several years, and it just never came to fruition, and it still is on the table. So, but to know that it's going to bring over what you specify and you have choices to make of what you do and do not bring over is a huge advantage. It gives you more control, which I like very much. But right now, doing everything manually, you have 100% control. So it really just depends on your workflow, on your staffing, how much time everyone has to do this. So yes, it's labor intensive and it may not be the most efficient, and humans are prone to error, but we have 2, 3, 4 sets of eyes on an IRFPI before it gets signed and locked up at the end. I agree with Denise, I sign it, or we all sign it anytime we go in and make any updates or addendums to it. And I would also say for the newer PPS coordinators with Epic, if you're using Epic, they have in their flow sheet a certain way to capture the section GG items that we found were a little bit confusing with the level of physical assistance versus other level of assistance. So we actually worked with Epic's corporate office in Wisconsin to change the flow sheet rows a little bit. So I want people to know out there that if it's confusing your staff or it's not working for you, to continue to work with your Epic team to try and make whatever changes you need to make that you think would make your system more accurate. Because accuracy is what it all comes down to, right? What can you rely on? What's going to pull over properly? And the things that can't pull over properly, do manually. You're better off.
Well, that's really great advice. I think the ears are wide open to that information, as I know many are still navigating and looking at decisions and options. Well, ladies, before we wrap up, is there anything else you want to briefly share that is trending in New York with your Medicare contractor? For those listening, that's the National Government Services, known as NGS, is their Medicare contractor in New York. What's trending?
Well, we are currently under an NGS TPE audit of, and forgive me because at this moment I forgot what TPE stands for, but I know it's an educational audit where it's several rounds where they request data based on their specifications. This particular audit is based on a primary diagnosis code being used on the UB-04, not the IRFPI etiology or impairment, but the primary diagnosis on the bill. So they specified one particular code and they are requesting charts that were coded with that on the UB. So we have had 14 charts requested thus far. Every round can have anywhere from 20 to 40 charts requested. We're still awaiting official word, but in this land, no news is good news. So we don't know how many denials or approvals, but from what we're hearing, so far it's been a fairly positive response. We do know that the low-hanging fruit of any audit are technical requirements. So the time you need to sign the H&P within 24 hours of admission, having an IOPOC or IOPOC created by day 4 of admission, weekly team conference notes, physician visits face-to-face 3 times a week or more. Those are the things that are always the first thing that an auditor may review for completion. And after that, it's kind of a judgment call, and we hope that they judge us fairly.
Yes, good luck indeed. And Denise, you're experiencing, you've heard from NGS as well with this TPE?
Yes, so we are undergoing that same audit that Randy mentioned, as I think are a couple of other facilities here in New York. So they have, you know, chosen one specific code, primary code. So it is a prepayment. So it's immediately upon, you know, the bill being sent prior to Medicare paying that bill. They are requesting, you know, the chart, additional clinical information. And, you know, fingers crossed. But what happens anytime there is an audit by National Government Services as an extension of CMS, they can look at anything. So I think, you know, again, making sure if you're concerned that there might be an audit coming, and even if you're not, doing regular chart audits yourself. We do them here at St. Charles. Really, we audit a certain number on a monthly basis. We have an interdisciplinary group that does it. We are CARF accredited here at St. Charles as well. So there are specific things we look at for CARF. There are certain things we look at for CMS. So we have a, you know, an audit tool that we use that kind of looks at a few different things. And basically then what we do is we summarize, we, you know, get feedback back to different departments, you know, in a timely fashion as they're being audited, but then we look at the year end for trends and things like that, that, you know, are concerns that we're having that seem to be ongoing. If there's anything that we're concerned about, like IPOCs not being done by the fourth day, or, you know, if there's a team member missing from being signed into team conference, things that we know that if we were audited, that entire stay can potentially be denied. So it's really important to know that the technical denials are the easy ones for them to do. Once they're in a medical record, they can make those easy technical denials.
So I did look up, it is targeted, probe, and educate. That's what you get. But one thing I did want to know, that I mean, Denise and I have discussed this. One thing we recommend to everyone who's ever asked for any chart requests, to make sure that someone on your rehab team, whether it's your PPS coordinator or a leadership, whoever it is, they should review that chart that is going to be sent by your HIM or finance department, because we found in historical audits that they requested charts, they were automatically sent out from whatever click HIM does to generate a chart, and it was missing the pre-admission screen, or it was missing the IRFPI, because those, again, were in a larger hospital system. Sometimes they miss the rehab documents. So you want to make sure someone from your internal team is always looking at those charts before they're sent out.
Absolutely. Well, ladies, that might be a setup for another discussion at another time, because maybe you can down the road share with us how you fared. We wish you lots of luck with all that. Thank you so much, Randy and Denise, for joining us today and sharing these personal experiences with your IRF processes. And to all our listeners, I hope that you enjoyed this episode of McBee Care Threads podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
At McBee, we understand the challenges providers face across the healthcare landscape. For more than 45 years, we've been a part of the evolution of the healthcare industry. Our strategic advisory solutions span the home health, hospice, health system, and senior living care continuums, creating improved clinical, financial, and operational outcomes. Our expertise is guaranteed. Our solutions empower. Visit us today at McBeeAssociates.com. Thank you for listening to McBee Care Threads. To ensure you never miss an episode, please subscribe to the show in your favorite podcast player. If you use Apple Podcasts, we'd love for you to give us a quick rating for the show. Just tap the number of stars that you think the podcast deserves. For more information on the topics discussed today, visit our website at McBeeAssociates.com. Until next time.